Hello, this is the Archaeology News Weekly, and I am David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now the main headlines from around the world are as follows. Amateur's prehistoric find wins at the British Archaeology Awards. The treasure trove in Scotland tells of ancient treasures that have been unearthed. And down south, we hear that Suffolk is best for buried treasure. But don't all rush at once now. Continuing the finds of artefacts by the public, we have a report on a 3,500-year-old weapon discovered in a Scottish burn. And we have further details on a massive Welsh fort. Greek archaeologists excavate a 6,500-year-old settlement, and did an asteroid cause an ancient New York tsunami? We learn a new theory that Neanderthals were outthrown by modern humans, and the world's most ancient nuclear family is discovered in Germany. An ancient monument to the soul is unearthed in Turkey, while a 7,000-year-old American find awaits further analysis. An ancient cemetery is discovered in western Iran, and finally we report on the possible remains of an Iron Age fort in England. It'll all come clear at the end there. An amateur archaeological team from Datchet in Berkshire in England have been highly commended at the British Museum for uncovering a prehistoric settlement at South Lee Farm. For the past 5 years, a group from Datchet Village Society have been carrying out regular digs at the site after viewing aerial photos of the village from the 1950s. Experts from local universities and museums have now labelled the discovery as very important after the volunteers unearthed evidence of a settlement dating back 3,000 years to the Neolithic period. The presence of human occupation dating from the Neolithic Age all the way up to the Roman period has now been revealed thanks to the group's investigations. Group members Julie Martin remarked that they initially set out to investigate crop marks at the farm, but as work progressed, they started turning up wonderful artefacts on the field walking. Professionals were called in to help identify them, and they encouraged the group to continue the project. The Datchet team were selected for the prestigious British Archaeology Awards and eventually won through in the Best Amateur or Independent Archaeological Project category against some very stiff opposition from professional groups. A 5,000-year-old axe head, a Bronze Age sword and mysterious carved stone balls form part of the Scotland's annual treasure trove, items found by archaeologists, enthusiasts and others who have handed them over to the Crown Office. Ian Ralston, a professor at Edinburgh University who sits on the treasure trove panel, said that many significant archaeological finds had been unearthed in Scotland this year. Items received by the treasure trove arrive via three routes. During standard archaeological excavations and fieldwork, by chance finds by members of the public, and by hobbyists using metal detectors. The 5,000-year-old axe head was unearthed at Stranraer, but was made from stone found in the Lake District. The Bronze Age sword was found near Lockerbie, and the mysterious carved balls were discovered at Pitmilly and Newborough in Fife. Amazing what you can find out there, and even better when you actually hand them in and let others know about it. So no excuses now. Suffolk and Norfolk are among the best places to find buried treasure, I do wish they'd stop saying the word treasure, in England, a new report has revealed. Hundreds of ancient objects have been unearthed by metal detecting enthusiasts in the two counties over recent years, according to the British Museum's latest annual commissioned report. Amongst the most notable local finds reported are 11 Bronze Age hoards near Ipswich in January 2006. Andrew Brown, the finds liaison officer for Suffolk, who is based with the Suffolk County Council Archaeology Service, said it was the rural nature of the two counties that was leading to more artefacts being unearthed. The Copdock find in 2006 was one of 48 treasures uncovered, they're using that word again, uncovered in the year in Suffolk, and was initially hit upon by a metal detector enthusiast who immediately contacted the county's archaeology service. An excavation from a small oval-shaped pit revealed a total of 56 objects dating to the late Bronze Age. The finds included numerous copper alloy ingots, at least 5 socketed axe heads, a cauldron and bucket fragments, as well as a leaf-shaped dagger, axe heads and metalworking debris. The Treasure Act has also seen a 10-fold increase in the amount of treasure items offered to museums. Culture Minister Barbara Follett, who is also the Minister for the East of England, said that the treasures of the past that are found in the fields, farms and fells across the United Kingdom are vital pieces in the jigsaw puzzle of history. They help us to understand the origins and development of our culture and identity. So to report a find, go to the Portable Antiquities website, and there you'll find the nearest finds liaison officer. And can I remind people that, of course, although we keep using the word treasures, I prefer to think of them not as monetary value treasures, but an information. And that's the whole point. If you find something, report it as quickly as possible to the finds liaison officer or your local archaeologist. They can come out and help actually record a lot more about it than just the item itself. While we're at it, we report on a Bronze Age spearhead which lay submerged in a burn for 3,500 years and was discovered and handed in to a museum. The spearhead was found wedged in a rock crevice in a burn at Menwick Water in Dumfriesshire in Scotland. It's now on display in Dumfries Museum. It's in remarkable condition, having survived in the water for 3,500 years. And once again, it was handed in. An update on last week's report on Gair Fawr, the prehistoric settlement that lies all but invisible beneath a forest in the lush Welsh countryside. Now the 2,900-year-old structure lives again thanks to the digital recreation following a painstaking survey by the Royal Commission on the Ancient and Historical Monuments of Wales. Larger hill forts such as Gair Fawr commanded the surrounding landscape, not just visually, but in terms of natural resources. Huge amounts of timber would have been required for both the building of the fort's palisades and the dwellings that the people lived in. Roundhouses excavated at Castle Hinless, for example, are estimated to have required some 30 oak trees each and 80 to 100 hazel bushes and some 2,000 bundles of reeds for the roof. The fort has prehistoric curving ramparts, but when you get to the top, there's a big straight bank, which is very unprehistoric. After the Roman period, Welsh princes rose to prominence in the area, and it may be that Gair Fawr, in common with many other hilltops in central Wales, was occupied by a court or castle of one of these early Welsh princes. Archaeologists in central Greece have unearthed the remains of a Neolithic settlement discovered by workers laying a gas pipeline, the Greek Cultural Ministry said. The finds include the remains of houses built of wood and unbaked clay bricks, together with pottery vases, ovens and stone tools. The Neolithic era remains were discovered during the work to lay a gas pipe near the village of Vasili in Thessaly, some 280 kilometres north of Athens. The ministry announcement said that the settlement was destroyed by fire, which had baked and hardened the clay parts of the house and preserved imprints of their wooden sections, which included several sawed planks. The economy was based on agriculture and animal farming. The team has only excavated a very small section of the site through which the gas pipe will pass, and it's unclear whether the dig will expand further as neighbouring plots are privately owned. Among the ruins, archaeologists found large quantities of pottery, including many painted vases, stone axes and scrapers, bone tools and a small number of terracotta figurines. More than 4,000 years after the settlement was abandoned, the low mound that covered it was used as a small cemetery, where 15 graves dating from the 4th to the 1st centuries BCE were excavated. The ministry said that archaeologists plan to analyse organic finds, such as seeds and pollen grains from the site, to study environmental conditions in the early 5th millennium BCE. Long before New York City was the Big Apple, or even New Amsterdam, a giant tsunami crashed ashore around 2,300 years ago. No one knows for sure what caused it, but new clues found in the Hudson silt suggest that an asteroid some 100 metres in diameter slammed into the Atlantic Ocean nearby. While examining samples, Catherine Kagan of Harvard University and a team of researchers found carbon spherules, perfectly round particles that form in the extreme pressures of an impact. And when they looked into these spherules, they found nanodiamonds. They have only ever been found in impact ejecta in meteorites. The team found grains of several shocked minerals in the sediments as well, but the discovery remains controversial. To get a wave 2.5 metres high that far up the Hudson, you need a wave 20 metres high at Manhattan, commented Steve Ward of the University of California, Santa Cruz. It would therefore have gone several hundred metres inland on Long Island, and evidence of this should still be visible all over the place. So far, the team have only found impact ejecta in deposits in the Hudson, with some as far as 50 kilometres upriver from the mouth. But they've taken samples of suspicious-looking sediments along the coasts of New Jersey and Long Island as well, and hope to find more of the strange minerals pointing to an impact origin. Cajun is convinced her team's work proves an impact caused the tsunami, but admits that they'll need to find the smoking gun, a crater probably buried in the continental shelf off New Jersey, to convince the skeptics. Human aerial bombardments might have pushed Neanderthals to extinction, suggests new research. Changes in bone shape left by a life of overhand throwing hint that Stone Age humans regularly threw heavy objects such as stones or spears, while Neanderthals did not. The anatomically modern humans would have this more effective and efficient form of hunting, says Jill Rhodes, a biological anthropologist at Bryn Mawr College in Pennsylvania. A warmer Europe would have opened up forests, enabling longer-range hunting, she says. Rhodes and a colleague studied changes to the humerus that connects the shoulder to the elbow to determine when humans may have begun to use projectile weapons. Studies of elite handball and baseball players suggest that frequent overhand throwing from an early age permanently rotates the shoulder end of the humerus towards an athlete's back compared to people who haven't. This bone rotation only occurs in the throwing arm, so a difference between the right and left arm in fossils could indicate projectile use. To find out, she and Churchill measured humerus bones from Neanderthals and ancient and modern humans. They found some evidence for projectile use in male European humans from around 26,000 to 28,000 years ago, the Middle Paleolithic period, who would have normally been contemporaries of Neanderthals. Their right humerus bone was generally more rotated toward their back than their left, while Rhodes' team noticed that no such asymmetry was found in Neanderthal arms. She remarked that Upper Paleolithic men were doing something different with their arms than the Neanderthals were. Whatever that was, though it's still hotly debated, and no jokes please. The oldest genetically identifiable nuclear family met a violent death, according to analysis of remains from 4,600-year-old burials in Germany. Researchers say the broken bones of these Stone Age people show they were killed in a violent struggle. Comparisons of DNA from one grave confirm it contained a mother, father, and their two children. The son and daughter were buried in the arms of their parents. Dr. Wolfgang Hack from the Australian Centre for Ancient DNA in Adelaide conducted the DNA analysis. He says the scientific evidence supports the idea that they were indeed a family. In total, the four graves contained 13 bodies, 8 children aged between 6 months to 9 years, and 5 adults between 25 to 60. In 2 graves, DNA was well preserved, which allowed comparisons between the occupants. One of these contained the nuclear family, while the other grave contained 3 related children and an unrelated woman. The researchers suggest that she may have been an aunt or stepmother. These Stone Age people are thought to belong to a group known as the cordedware culture, signified by their pots decorated with the impressions from twisted cords. The new findings also suggest an explanation for anomalies in how later Stone Age people in Central Europe were buried. Typically, males of all ages rest on their right side facing south, and women on their left side facing south. But sometimes there are exceptions to this rule. This was indeed the case with the nuclear family, where each child faced north towards one of the adults, with whom their hands were entwined. Hack speculates the arrangement may symbolize blood ties. The most grisly aspect of the find is the manner of their deaths. Dr. Pike says it was violent. They were definitely murdered, with big holes in their heads, fingers and wrists broken. At least five of the individuals show the effect of a violent attack. One even has the tip of a stone weapon embedded in its vertebra. Examination of the skeletons found that the adults were aged between 25 to 60 years old, for that period, and the children younger than 13 years old. Several of the adults had partially healed injuries. These were old and injured people, children and women. Whatever violence happened that day, they were not capable of fighting, says Hack. He added that it's probably the most that most of the adults were elsewhere at the time, perhaps out fighting or working their fields. Research says that such violence fits with what we know about life in Central Europe at that time. The area had fertile soils, a stable climate and natural access routes. This made it a very desirable place to live, but also created competition amongst its inhabitants, leading often to violent confrontations when one community tried to displace another. Archaeologists in southeastern Turkey have discovered an Iron Age chiseled stone slab that provides the first written evidence in the region that people believed the soul was separate from the body. The Neubauer expedition of the Oriental Institute at the University of Chicago found the 800-pound basalt stele, 3 foot tall and 2 foot wide, at Zincirli, the site of the ancient city of Sam'al. Once the capital of a very prosperous kingdom, it's now one of the most important Iron Age sites under excavation. The stele is the first of its kind to be found intact in its original location, enabling scholars to learn about funerary customs and life in the 8th century BCE. The man featured on the stele was probably cremated. According to the inscription, the soul of the deceased resided within the stone. German archaeologists first excavated the 100-acre site in the 1890s and unearthed massive city walls, gates and palaces. A number of royal inscriptions and other finds are now on display in museums in Istanbul and Berlin. The stele was discovered last summer in a small room that had been converted into a mortuary shrine for the royal official Kutumuwa, self-inscribed in the inscription as a servant of King Panamuwa of the 8th century BC. It was found in the outer part of the walled city in a domestic area, most likely the house of Kutumuwa himself, far from the royal palaces where inscriptions had previously been found. A translation of the inscription by Dennis Pardee, a professor of Near Eastern Languages and Civilization at Chicago, reads in part as follows. I, Kutumuwa, servant of the king Panamuwa, am the one who oversaw the production of this stele for myself while still living. I placed it within an eternal chamber and established a feast at this chamber. A bull for the god Hadad, a ram for the god Shamash, and a ram for my soul that is within this stele. In addition to the writing, a pictorial scene chiselled into the well-preserved stele depicts the culture's view of the afterlife. A bearded man wearing a tasselled cap, presumably Kutumuwa himself, raises a cup of wine and sits before a table laden with food, bread, and a roast duck in a stone bowl. The findings shed a striking new light on Iron Age beliefs about the afterlife. In this case, it was the belief that the enduring identity or the soul of the deceased inhabited the monument on which the image was carved and on which his final words were recorded. Some 20 years ago, Janet and Leroy Peterson discovered some of the bones of a giant and now extinct species of bison that Minnesota's first inhabitants hunted and butchered some 7,000 years ago at a site just south of Granite Falls in Minnesota, USA. Marks on the bones indicated that the 2,000 to 3,000 pound animals were hunted with stone-tipped spears and sharpened sticks and were butchered with stone tools. The hunters carried spears with throwing sticks known as atlatls that allowed them to fling the spears like darts at the huge animals. It appears that they cornered the bison between two rock ledges and possibly mired them in a bed of clay in what is now Peterson's pasture. From atop the rock ledges, they could toss rocks and spears down on the trapped beasts. The Peterson's bison kill site remains one of the most important archaeological finds in the state for what it can tell us about its earliest inhabitants. Archaeologists believe that further exploration at the bison kill site could tell us a great deal about these early people, and it's very likely that the people either had a hunting camp or a village very close, as they would not have wanted to haul these giant slabs of meat any great distance. But even before further excavation is attempted, the pieces of the puzzle already uncovered at the site need to be put together. It's never been subjected to a detailed analysis, and the Petersons have been protecting the site in the hope that someday archaeologists will return again. So there you go. If you're an archaeologist in Minnesota, there's a fabulous job for you. A prehistoric burial ground was found near the Iranian city of Sanandaj, located in the country's western Kurdistan province. The 3,000-year-old cemetery, which was found during a road construction project, is located 500 metres from the previously known ancient mound of Zagros. According to Kurdistan's Provincial Cultural Heritage Office, 5 squat burials have been found in the cemetery, along with spears, bronze bracelets and earthenware. Archaeologists have uncovered what could be the remains of an ancient Iron Age hill fort in the Black Country in the West Midlands of England. This exciting find was made during a dig on behalf of the Black Country Housing Group, and a group of eager schoolchildren were on hand to witness it. The land has been earmarked by the group and a church for the 35 apartments. The Iron Bridge Gorge Museum Trust were commissioned to carry out an archaeological survey of the site before the development work started. Sharon Faraday, the development manager for the Black Country Housing Group, said that it is potentially a very exciting find, and they're thrilled that the schoolchildren were able to see a dig in action. The archaeologists will continue to work on the site and trace its history. Once all the evidence has been recorded and analysed and the ground re-landscaped, the Black Country Housing Group will submit a planning application for development of the site. Trust archaeologist Anna Wallace said it has long been thought that an Iron Age hill fort was located on the site in Wednesbury, but no firm evidence has ever been found to support it. Until now. Now, I have just been passed a piece of information by a podcast listener, and they wanted to point out the following. There is a major new conference called Culture Wars, Heritage and Armed Conflict in the 21st Century. It's going to be held at the Fitzwilliam Museum in Cambridge between the 11th of December and Saturday the 13th of December. It's going to be looking at issues such as how the nature of 21st century conflict bears upon immovable heritage, whether international conventions are appropriate to the recent scenarios, for example, in Iraq, in the Balkans and Afghanistan, and why sites are destroyed and to what ends. It also looks at whether intervention is ethically justifiable, and does the intensity of the contest over heritage open paths to reconciliation itself? Well, that's only a few of the items that are going to be discussed at this conference. And if you'd like to see more, then I suggest you get along to their website, which is www.crash.cam.ac.uk. Crash is spelt C-R-A-S-S-H, by the way. So that was www.crash.cam.ac.uk/events/166. That will take you to the website. Either do that or Google Culture Wars, Heritage and Armed Conflict, and that will take you to them. So thank you very, very much to Benjamin Morris at Cambridge. A little name check for you there. Thanks very much for listening. And it just basically finishes off with the usual. You can find amazing new reports from the magazine, this amazing flip magazine that we do with Past Horizons. That's www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. You can always have a look at the latest heritage videos at www.pasthorizons.tv/TV. And of course, more can always be found at Badger. That's www.bajr.org. And how can I not mention Stone Pages, the producer of all this fabulous news? You can see all this and more at Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. Thanks very much for listening to us, and we hope you'll return again to us next week, where I might actually have a report upon a new centre at Cresswell Crags.